I'm out of control. Had you had a bank account before FATCA and you were reporting it, your investments, everything, paying your taxes, that was totally fine. The banking privacy was the same and it still is today.
I couldn't have said it better.
Welcome to the Swiss Money Secrets Podcast, a podcast designed to cover all things offshore investing and banking from the Swiss perspective.
Let's get into it. Hello and welcome back to the Swiss Money Secrets Podcast. We're excited to be back in the room in our recording studio to talk about some interesting changes that have happened in Switzerland in relation to the U.S. And FATCA and what that means for Americans and American citizens and those holding offshore accounts and what that means for Swiss financial institutions. Before we get into that, for our Swiss news topic, on top of the Swiss news topic that we'll be covering today, we're going to talk about Lucerne. The city of Lucerne voted down a basic or a minimum income initiative this week, I believe, or they voted on it a while back, but the results came in this week. So maybe, Jamie, could you start us out on explaining of, I guess, what that change is and how, I guess, the Swiss population sees this basic loan as?
I mean, it's not a loan. It's a basic income that is not tied to anything, really. So any person that's above the age of 18 will get a certain amount. I think the more left-leaning party have floated around 4,000 francs in the past. I'm not sure what exactly it was in Lucerne. I think it was more of a pilot project. It was shot down quite significantly. I think it was over 60% of people who said no, which for Swiss standards is a very strong reaction. I think typically we have responses between 51 and 53%, yes or no. So it's a very clear sign that the population is against it. We saw that in other cities, in other places as well, where people have voted against it. Two things for me come to mind. One is the people going to vote on a topic was extremely low. So only 37% of people who are eligible to vote actually took the time to vote. So that's something that, to me, as a person who loves democracy, is always a little bit worrisome. But I think it also shows that people are not very emotionally invested in the topic, because typically for more controversial, for more emotional topics, people really turn out in bigger numbers than 37%. And that's maybe something that's a bit surprising, that like a basic income without any restrictions or requirements is not really able to stir the people up in Switzerland. And then the other thing, which I think is something that's typical Swiss, is that our population has a very economic mindset. So a few years ago, we also had a vote on increasing vacation days for employees here in the country. I mean, compared to US standards, we already have a lot of vacation. We have 20 days per week of paid vacation, so for a year, yes, of course. And there was an initiative to increase that to 25 days, so 5 weeks. And there also the population was against it. So yeah, I think that might be surprising for some people outside of the country. But other than that, I mean, there's not really going to be any changes. I think the Swiss population is probably a bit too conservative for a project of that magnitude. And it's just interesting to see how our democracy works and also the specific topics that we get to have a say in.
Yeah, so maybe on this side as well, as you said, this topic already came up in the past. So I think in 2016 there was already a national or a vote in the national level. And I think there the votes against it were about 77% or so. So much more significant than last year as well. In Zurich, there was a vote on that. So the parties or the people who like that, they try it every now and then in different areas or even on a national level. But as you said, I mean, the economical mindset of the people goes pretty much against it. And I mean, to be fair, we have a very good social system where people who need help get the help here in Switzerland. And then on top of that, I mean, this vote doesn't mean that like the Swiss people are just not allowing more cash or more money, more wealth to people. It also comes from the other way around. So many, many years back in 2005, for example, there was an executive pay initiative, which was initiated by a person who was involved in a bigger fail of Swissair at that time in 2001, who didn't get paid. And this vote was about giving more rights to the shareholders to prevent like executive members to get like in advance payments, because at that time one of the members, I think the CEO, even got like 5 year salaries in advance before the company crashed, and stuff like this got prevented or was prevented at that time. And like the Swiss people, they want to have a certain range, but it has to be economical and it has to somehow be fair in our perspective.
Yeah,
and I think from my perspective, what I've seen in, you know, having lived in Switzerland for over 5 years and worked in multiple places, Swiss employers are willing to pay a fair salary. You know, it's not that they look, you know, like in the States, often when I was on a job site or whatever, and it was an unskilled job, but they'd look at, okay, what's the basic or minimum income or minimum hourly rate, and they just give you that immediately. They wouldn't think about it. In Switzerland, they really look at what the work is valued, what it's valued to them, and like, can they actually pay a fair wage to their employees? Because I think Swiss mindset, especially in the business, is it understands compensating your talent to retain your talent. Otherwise, you just get turnover, and it doesn't mean avoiding the bottom line. It just means making sure you're paying your talent to stay and actually produce for you, which I think is something that's very interesting that maybe you guys haven't seen or already have that in your mindset as the Swiss people, of ensuring that you pay a fair salary. Cool. So I think we've covered that. I think we can move on to our topic for today, which is the FATCA. FATCA, for our listeners, is the foreign account. Oh man, I'm blank. I just
tax
blanked.
Compliance
Thank
Act.
You. Thank you. Foreign Account Tax Compliance Act. Wow. I cannot believe I blanked on that. It was initially brought in by the US government in 2010 under the Barack Obama administration as a part of the HIRE Act, which was trying to stimulate the US economy that was working its way out of the great financial crisis. And it was intended to have the proceeds of FATCA trying to catch tax evasion or people trying to avoid taxes, use the proceeds to then support the businesses. So that's how it kind of worked its way in, and how it's now affects the global market of banks or financial institutions. And so, Jamie, maybe you could tell us about some of the changes, or not changes, but announcements that we heard recently in Switzerland about FATCA and how Switzerland complies to FATCA.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's important that later on we talk a little bit more about what it means for Americans and why it was implemented in more details. But why we talk about it today specifically is because the US and Switzerland have found an agreement to change from Model 2 to Model 1. So when the agreement was signed between the two countries in 2014, they agreed upon level or Model 2, and now I believe a week or two ago in November 2023, they have agreed on switching it to Model 1. I think what's important to note is that for US taxpayers, from my understanding, maybe you just have to do a little legal disclaimer that we are not US tax experts, and we are also not legal experts when it comes to FATCA. It's just that we have a lot of experience working with Americans who hold foreign assets, so we have a little bit of practical experience in that area. My understanding is that it's not going to affect US taxpayers in any way, but it's going to change how Swiss financial institutions are going to report. So far under Model 2, they have reported directly to the Internal Revenue Services, the IRS in the US, and under Model 1, they're going to report to the Swiss, the equivalent to the IRS in Switzerland, the tax authorities here, which will make the process a bit more efficient. And it will probably be less administratively burdensome for the Swiss banks. It will probably be a little less costly. Those are all good things, at least from the Swiss perspective. And I think one other aspect that has been floating around is that it will be more, it will be harder for people who report their taxes to the US but not to Switzerland. It will be harder for them to do so going forward. So there will be a bit more transparency for Swiss authorities, for people who reside in Switzerland, to file their taxes as well. How many people actually file their taxes in the US and don't file them in Switzerland? I don't know. I don't think that that's like a major problem. I don't think that that's going to be a lot of people, but who knows, maybe a handful. So this is the reason why we thought it makes sense to pick it up today, this recent change that has happened. But more broadly, why I think we all agreed that it makes sense to talk about is that every client that we have from the US that banks with us here in Switzerland or in Liechtenstein, they are affected by FATCA. And I think it makes sense to just take a step back, talk about what it exactly means for Americans and what they need to consider, and maybe also a little bit of a comparison to the automatic exchange of information, the common reporting standards that we have that are somewhat similar but not the same as FATCA, just to shed some light on this whole landscape.
Yeah. So Urs, maybe, I mean, it's just, you know, Jamie, you mentioned that, you know, there's not a lot of changes for Americans who, let's say, are holding an offshore account in Switzerland or Liechtenstein, for example. But along those lines of what you said, what do Americans need to expect? Maybe some of our listeners have, this is their first time getting into offshore trust or offshore accounts, and what that means. What do they need to expect from FATCA of what needs to be done and how they need to file? Again, not as experts, but things that we're aware of that can start them on the right path.
Yeah, I mean, with FATCA, it's mainly the responsibilities lay with the financial institution, which is the foreign financial institution from a US perspective, and with the beneficial owner of the funds. And so what Jamie just explained with Model 2 and Model 1 is that there is some changes in the process for the institutions. As far as I understand, there is not that much of a change for the individual. So they got the data they have to report to the IRS in their tax form. So there is like the highest value of the account, some in and outflows of the account. And other than that, I'm not aware that there is much more. But you usually get the information from the bank.
Yeah,
so I think from my understanding, there's two things that you have to file. One is the Form 8938, and the other is the FBAR. FBAR stands for Foreign Bank Account Reporting. What's incredibly important to say here on the podcast, as well as we say that every time we speak to new clients personally, you need to make sure that you file things properly. And the easiest or most secure way to do that is by working with a CPA or a tax attorney that understands international bank accounts. Mm-hmm. We very much understand international bank accounts. Again, we're not tax experts. And at the same time, there's a lot of tax experts in the US that don't understand international bank accounts. So filing your foreign bank accounts, it's not illegal to do so. It's not shady. The US government doesn't have a problem with you doing so, but they do have a very severe problem with you having bank accounts outside of the country and not reporting them and not paying your taxes on them. So I think that's probably the biggest takeaway, is if you currently have an offshore bank account, if you're thinking about an offshore bank account, then make sure that you have proof that your CPA knows what they're doing. It might make sense to talk to a new person and maybe keep your existing CPA for your domestic banking and then one for the offshore banking. Because if you make mistakes with the F4 or the other form, then there's quite severe fines and penalties. And I think there can even be criminal proceedings being initiated against you. So this is something to be taken very seriously. But as Urs has said, in terms of what you have to report, that doesn't really change with this the change from Model 2 to Model 1. And also what you have to report is different. So for FBAR, I think it's the $10,000. If it's more than that, you have to report it for the other form. There's a different thresholds. It also depends if you're an individual or if you're married. So as probably every American knows, the US tax code is very complicated, and you really need an expert that understands the ins and outs and where you can stumble or where you can miss something or forget something. So always get the help you need to file everything properly.
Yeah, and just a quick point on the FBAR. FBAR is if you have foreign bank accounts, doesn't matter how many you have, if they go one penny over $10,000, you have to report every single one. Mm-hmm. So that means it's important to know if you did have a foreign account, or maybe you're just a US person living abroad and have a foreign bank account. If it's over $10,000, you need to report it. And if you have another account that maybe you set up as a joint account with your child or whatever, and that has $500 in it, they look at the combined value of those foreign bank accounts. So that would also have to be reported, even though it's not an account over $10,000. It's just the total value. And with the form that you file for your foreign accounts, I believe it's the 8539. I'm out of control. That's $50,000. Of collecting.
For an individual.
For an individual, correct.
Yes.
And so again, as Jamie said, I agree totally. Always speak to professionals, because even something that seems fairly straightforward, you can find all the information on the IRS website, it's still very confusing. As an American, I'm always reading. You misread things. You don't understand things fully. It's very important to talk to professionals, just so that you don't accidentally do it. You might be a person who wants to report, pay your taxes, has no problem, but if you miss something here or there, there's little nuances in the law that can really punish you and cost a lot of money, even though it was just a simple mistake or misunderstanding.
I mean, that's also the way how they make money out of it, because I mean, to be honest here, the intention was to collect all the undeclared funds and to raise or increase tax income for or taxes that flows into the country, but that wasn't really the issue. And so the most money they made is by giving out fines.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the whole implementation of FATCA, where it says where the fines come in, is in the HIRE Act, that they would pay for the stimulation of these businesses that were struggling to hire unemployed people, that the FATCA proceeds would go and pay for these stimulus packages.
Yeah, maybe now that we have created a little bit of fear or worry in our listener, we can also take some of that away by saying, if you work with an SEC registered investment advisor and you work with private banks that understands US citizens and people who have US connections, be it a residence or passport, green card, whatever, they issue tax statements where you can find all the information that you need to file the documents properly. Yeah. So you don't have to go collect all that information by yourself and invest hours and hours. You will get one quite thorough English US dollar denominated statement that shows all of that for you. So it's definitely doable. You just have to take it seriously. You have to do it properly. And I think if we're talking about the curious things about FATCA, I always find it interesting to also note that while the US essentially forced every country to comply with their Tax Compliance Act, they are one of the very few countries that is not part of the Common Reporting Standards, which are part of the automatic exchange of information. So while they collect information on their taxpayers all around the globe, they are not giving out any information themselves. And then also the US is one of the very few countries that even does tax their taxpayers globally. Almost no other country does that. So that's quite interesting.
I believe one other country
as well.
Does.
I think it's Eritrea. Yeah, I have read correct. They do it as well.
Yeah, one country.
Yes. Yeah. So that's certainly interesting as well. But now that we have talked about like how the account is reported to the IRS, how you have to file taxes, etc., that might sound like a bit of a contradiction to the other content that we provide, the other information we have given before, where we say that a Swiss bank account still offers a lot of privacy. And maybe we can also talk a little bit about that, because in my opinion, it's still very valid to say that a Swiss bank account gives you more privacy as an American. The Bank Secrecy Act of 1934 is still in place in Switzerland. That has not changed. How it is interpreted or how it is used in practice, that has changed with FATCA and CRS and all of that. but you still have a lot more privacy protection towards noisy neighbors or family members or parents or kids or who should maybe not be informed to the full extent of your wealth. And also in the US, we have a lot of cybersecurity problems. Your information can be breached a lot more easily. There's also an army of information brokers who are just trying to pry information out of your financial statements, out of your online bank accounts, etc. So by having your wealth outside of your home country, even if it is reported to the IRS, even if you do pay taxes on it, you still have more privacy protection and thus also a higher level of asset protection because your wealth is less visible, and that means that you're less likely to be targeted for a frivolous lawsuit. And then, of course, we have all the other benefits of Swiss and Liechtenstein bank accounts we talk about a lot, but I think the privacy aspect is quite important to highlight here as well. Things have changed, but you still get an extremely high level of protection.
Yeah, I do want to say on that point, it was always the case that Americans had to report financial foreign holdings.
Yes.
Like there was never a time where it's, you know, this law came in and now all of a sudden it's you're required to do something more. And so the privacy, as what you're talking about, has actually never changed. It's just now a law that US citizens have to do it and that the financial institutions comply with US tax authorities. But had you had a bank account before FATCA and you were reporting it, your investments, everything, paying your taxes, that was totally fine. That was what was intended to be as far as from a US standpoint, and still at that point the banking privacy was the same, and it still is today the same, and how it holds up as far as not allowing information to go out about your personal information to any kind of third party outside of the tax authorities, which you should have been doing before regardless.
That's a really good point and important to know. And I think also like pointing to other companies, because I mean there are a lot of companies who are also interested in your financial situation to better target the market out there, and here you really get no information from the banks.
Hard. Yeah, I think it is interesting. I was listening to a report talking about data handlers even in the US and how they just approach companies in the US and say, hey, here's an X amount of dollar of that we want to pay you for all of your clients' details.
Yeah.
No one has to know. And that's something that you can ensure by working with Swiss private banks or financial institutions or wealth managers, that cannot happen. They can be approached, but it's punishable by law, jail time, hefty fines, you know, protecting the client's data and personal information, which I think is a big positive.
Absolutely. And on top of the law, I think it's also very ingrained in our culture. I think privacy protection, minding your own business, not sticking your nose into anyone else's business, that's a very Swiss way of living, and something that we learn and are socialized to do also from a very young age, even though if it wasn't like punishable by law, which it is. I think Swiss people are more private and more conservative than some people from other parts of the world.
Yeah, I mean, to add on to that point, I mean, the Swiss Banking Privacy Act wasn't even introduced until the 30s, I believe, the 1930s.
Yeah.
And before, it was just the way it was their common practice of Swiss financial institutions. So I think that adds up to your point of it just being ingrained in the culture. And it's led Switzerland down a successful road as far as really taking the client serious and placing them first and ensuring that they are taken care of above all else, and taking on the risk as the person to make sure that they're protected as the company that's managing them. And I wanna say to people where you might get afraid of these reporting things, maybe you're a US citizen who's never actually lived in the US, you were born outside, you grew up outside, you're not connected, don't be afraid to get in contact with tax consultants to discuss these things and how to move forward. In these cases, when working with professionals, there's usually a good outcome. There's paperwork involved, but I've known a few people who've had to go through that process here in Switzerland, who had an American connection and never knew about it until they were in their mid-20s, late 20s, 30s, And they had to go through the work, but it was nothing that put them in jeopardy, nothing that put their passport in jeopardy. So there's a lot of fear that can come around it, but I think it's a good to stay calm, seek out the professional help if you're in that situation. And if you're working with us or want to work with us, always ask questions about these things, and we can point you into the direction of tax specialists and tax attorneys and CPAs that have really good knowledge.
Absolutely.
So with that, do we have any final thoughts that we want to put in the episode, Jamie?
Well, I think my final thoughts, just a summary, make sure that you understand the reporting requirements, make sure they work with professionals, but also make sure that you don't miss out on any opportunities just because they come with a little bit more paperwork.
I couldn't have said it better. No, it is really the case. I mean, there are quite a few people like... take a step back if they hear about, oh, then you have to do that on top of that. But you really can miss out on a lot if you don't go through that. And I mean, at the end of the day, it's not that hard.
Thanks again for joining us on this episode of the Swiss Money Secrets podcast. If you would like to learn more about WHVP and what we do, check us out on our website at whvp.ch. Or you can check us out on any of our social media handles on LinkedIn, Facebook, YouTube, or Instagram by simply searching WHVP. Have a great rest of your day.